First case this morning is Stevens v. Stevens. Mr. Floodman, good morning to you. I should note that Justice Stacy is recused in this matter, and you may proceed.
May it please the court, Steve Floodman with co-counsel Stephanie Floodman on behalf of the appellant in this case, Janet Stevens, who was represented during the trial by her guardian ad litem, Kelly Collison. Ms. Stevens is suffering a substantial mental illness and is unemployable and, in fact, refuses to recognize that there, in fact, is a divorce. I appear here this morning, this is a somewhat unique case in that there really are no factual disputes. The witness was Mr. Stevens. I had no ability to call Ms. Stevens, and we were fortunately able to stipulate to the value of all of the entities which you'll find on Exhibit 2 of the record. This is a case involving a lot of money. We're appealing, and it's our position that the lower court abused its discretion in three different fashions. First, and pivotal to this case, is their finding that the increase in value of Stevens and Smith from under $300,000 to $5.2 million during this 25-year marriage was non-marital. The second issue was the length of the spousal support that was awarded. The judge ordered 10 years of spousal support at $1,200 a month. Under 42362, although not required, it's our contention that this small amount of alimony should have been continued until the mental illness was corrected, so that if Miss Stevens was unable to take care of herself and mental health treatment can be very, very expensive, that there would be an opportunity after 10 years, should it be needed, to go back and ask the court to review that issue. The third issue is that Miss Stevens was awarded a one-half interest in three entities that we all agreed were marital. The problem is the articles of those LLCs required consent of all of the members. And I have some concern as to whether the members of an LLC in a fairly substantial business are going to want a mentally ill person as a partner. Whitesides versus Whitesides address some of the problems that can be created when, in fact, the lower court takes that action. I want to spend most of my time this morning dealing, which is by far the most pivotal issue in this case, and that is how you treat the increase in value of Stevens and Smith. Stevens and Smith was a small construction company doing driveways and sidewalks, and at the time of the marriage was valued something slightly under $300,000. There's no issue, all that's stipulated to. At the time of this divorce, Mr. Stevens' interest in that business was $5.2 million, none of which Ms. Stevens was able to share in because of a lower court's ruling. I think the lower court failed to understand the distinction between active versus passive appreciation. This court recently addressed that issue involving retirement accounts in the cases of Kufall versus Kufall and Stanicek versus Stanicek. Admittedly, Kufall said that this ruling was limited to the particular facts of this case. Stanicek, however, said, yes, it's limited to the facts, but the reasoning of Kufall can be applied to other situations. That's what I want to talk about today. Mr. Stevens owns 34% today of Stevens and Smith, of the stock. He's been president since day one. He has been the one that was primarily responsible for setting the course of this company. He's done a darn good job. He's made decisions on bonuses, on salaries. He's made decisions on how investments were made. And for this case, most importantly, he testified without hesitation, my goal for my family was to increase our family wealth. He did a nice job over 25 years. He said the way you do that is you make the investments within the company. And you don't take bonuses. You don't take dividends because you got to pay extra tax then. The reality, he's right. But what he was making investments for, what he testified, I was making, this was an investment vehicle for the family. Come time now for the divorce, he's got a mentally ill spouse, and apparently it's now investments for himself.
Do you think that we should be looking at this ruling, that this is non-marital, as an abuse of discretion, or did the trial judge make an error of law in the trial judge's understanding of how to approach this asset?
I think it's actually both, Your Honor. The facts, there's no dispute as to facts in this case. None. His application of the facts to the law flies in the face of what I think this court has consistently done. I want to point out that...
Counsel, how does the Grace Award fit into the analysis on this issue?
First of all, the appellee has not challenged the Grace Award. It is certainly not necessary in this case or appropriate if you adopt the proposal that we're making, which is this is clearly marital property. There's no need for a Grace Award. And I will say that if you look at the Grace case, this is a real stretch. But I don't think you really have to go there, because that issue hasn't been appealed. If for some reason you do not agree this is marital, I think it has to stand.
Is it your position is that at the beginning of the marriage, and you're only talking about this one particular piece of property or business?
Yes.
Had about $300,000 value at the beginning of the marriage, and through the efforts of the husband who worked at the business, the property increased to $5 million.
Your Honor, that is correct. And I want to point out, and I think it's
but
very...
But you're arguing that this non-owner spouse doesn't have to actually make the contributions in order for that.
Let me directly respond to that, Your Honor. I think in both Stanicek and Kupal, this court talked about the difference between passive and active and talked about whether there had been active involvement by the parties. It would be a unique situation if, in all other areas of divorce, the mere fact that one party put money into 401k and the other didn't meant that the party that didn't contribute but may have contributed very much in other ways to this marriage gets none of the 401k. You see, Mr. Stevens, two-thirds of the value of Stevens and Smith is RIP Inc., a solely owned subsidiary. What is RIP Inc.? They hold a number of multi-family complexes. That totals his investment. That's what he was doing. It was no different than if he'd taken the money, put it in the 401k.
Was there evidence that there was money available to be taken out of the corporation, such as distributions or salaries or things of that nature, that he would have gone into the marital pot that was then removed for RIP Inc.?
There is evidence to that effect. If you actually, this court doesn't have to take any giant leap. You've already decided this same case, essentially, in Rezac versus Rezac. I wouldn't normally quote from the case during oral argument, but this is so clear that I want to read from what Rezac says. It says, if the respondent's ownership was nominal, and there was an increase in the value of the stock during the marriage, or if the increase in value of the stock was strictly an inflationary increase, he would have a good argument that the stock should be viewed as continuing in separate ownership during the marriage and at the time of dissolution. The trial court is justified, however, in treating it differently. When the percentage of ownership is substantial and improvements or additions are made to the corporate assets through application of corporate income, which would otherwise be distributed to the party not made substantial invest or during marriage. In this case, had the corporation not made substantial investments in improving its facility, the value of the stock may have remained about the same. But the respondent would have received additional income resulting in marital assets which would be subject to division at the time of the dissolution. For that reason, we find no error in the court's using the appreciated value of the stock at the time of the dissolution.
Did the court take into consideration, do you think, or could the court take into consideration the mental health issue of the wife here, and perhaps she was not contributing the way other spouses might have contributed?
He may have, but she did contribute during most of the marriage as a realtor. Personally pledged, Mr. Stevens personally pledged $6 million of their personal assets, which was a, he acknowledged was a partial reason for the growth of the company. I say I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Before you sit down, I have one more question.
Sure.
Didn't, in making the Grace Award, didn't the court explain that its calculation was based on the very appreciation that you're talking about?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I believe what the lower court did is recognize that to do what he did resulted in a grossly unfair result, and tried to analogize and said, well, that doesn't seem right, so I'm going to throw her a bone and give her $1,000,001. You can say that's a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but the reality is if the law is properly applied in this case, I'm asking that you remand the case in order that, finding that Stevens and Smith is marital, and that the court enter a judgment in her favor for approximately $3.2 million, which you can find, and you, the numbers are right there on Exhibit 2. The pole star of all of these cases is fairness and equitable, and this did not result in an equitable result. And keep in mind, Ms. Stevens has children that are not of this marriage, so it can have lasting effects on them as well. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kiker, good morning to you.
Good morning. The court recognizes my name is David Kiker. I'm counsel for Robert Stevens, who is the appellee in this matter.
Mr. Kiker, before you delve too deeply, do you agree with your opponent that the Grace Award did not have any explanation of the basis, and that it was related in some fashion to the appreciation of the Stevens and Smith?
I don't disagree. In preparation for the hearing, I did review the decree that was entered by Judge Ott, and I know that this trial was a trial where both counsels worked well with one another, worked well with the court, and trying to get all of the evidence in, understanding the circumstances, unique circumstances, with Ms. Stevens and her having a guardian. I know that in the decree, the judge, and I thought Judge Ott was very thoughtful in addressing the Grace Award, and I think he considered all of the facts that were before the court at trial, including the understanding that Mr. Stevens did have this non-marital asset and interest in his corporation, Stevens and Smith.
Well, didn't the decree or the somewhere, wasn't there a mathematical calculation of what the appreciation would have been between one-third and one-half?
I think he did. Oftentimes we see in these decrees there's no factual findings, and they're very short, very boilerplate. I know in this case that wasn't the situation. I think Judge Ott was very thoughtful and spent a couple of pages going through analytically how he reached that Grace Award.
Okay, thank you.
I think what Mr. Fledman said is true. I think most of the facts here, if not all, are undisputed. Certainly the interpretation of the facts are in debate, if you will. If you look at our cases, I mean, both Mr. Fledman and I, we go two different directions as far as what we believe the law to be. I think the law is very clear that this is a Van Newkirk, a Bushy, a Preston case type of analysis. And I think all those names.
Well, it was Bowie.
Just
from long ago, I know.
I mispronounced it for 20 years. But all of those cases, I think, are very analogous to the case at hand. You know, Van Newkirk was a farm case. Bowie was a pharmacy ownership case. Preston was an ambulance case. They're all akin to what we have in the case at hand, which is we have this premarital entity. And this was a long-term marriage. But prior to the marriage, this company started in 1971.
Would you say that this company increased in value without the active efforts of Mr. Stevens?
I think he absolutely played a role. We're very transparent at trial, and the record is transparent that he did play a role.
So, if you had, like in COFO, a retirement fund that had a guaranteed rate of return, regardless of what the owner did, that would be a passive increase in value without the active efforts of either one of the spouses. But in this case, you started with $300,000 worth of value, and at the end of 25 years, the company is valued at $5 million. And that was Mr. Stevenson's principal business activity, wasn't it?
Agreed.
So the increase in value was the result of the active efforts of Mr. Smith during the marriage.
And I would agree that it was due at least in part to the active efforts of Mr. Smith.
So in COFA we said you have to look at these things on a case-by-case basis, but aren't we moving toward an active-type, passive-type valuation of premarital assets such that if the premarital asset increases and that neither spouse has had anything to do with it, that probably remains a premarital asset. But if you have a premarital asset and this increases due to the active efforts of one of the spouses, why isn't that marital property?
Well, I think there's significant distinctions. First, I've reviewed the COFO case, and there is, in the heart of the COFO case, this analysis of passive versus active. It appears that maybe the decision's going to go a particular way and adopt something. Fortunately, the legislature hasn't provided us any guidance. We don't have any statutes in that regard. But how COFO ended was with, well, there was discussion.
I doubt if the legislature is going to define what is active and passive interest in premarital property.
And I briefed that issue, and I think that they do in other states. Those issues, at least in some states, have been addressed to a degree by the legislature and are statutory. But specifically here, how COFO ends is not to adopt this active versus passive, as I interpret it. How COFO ends is to say, well, here's what we're going to do on the very narrow facts of this particular case, which is dealing with an investment vehicle. I think there's a lot of distinctions between this case and COFO.
Oh, I do too. I don't think COFO is, because COFO was purely passive efforts on the part of the spouse, and that was property was increase in value due to market, or not market forces, but actually a contractual agreement that wouldn't change.
And I don't disagree with that.
But when you have cases that involve active efforts by either one or both spouses with regard to the non-marital property, why shouldn't that be included in the marital estate?
Several reasons. First of all, as far as comparison of this case to other cases, I think it's more analogous to the Van Newkirk, Bougie, Preston cases. I think another reason is when you look at COFO, again, we're dealing with an investment vehicle. Here, we're dealing with an asset where Mr. Stevens did work there, but he didn't have control. You know, we're looking at some
Excuse
of these
me,
cases.
But I think your opposing counsel has suggested that in addition to the primary work of Stevens and Smith, the profits were used and converted into an investment vehicle, for example, whatever's in RIP or real estate things and so forth.
Well,
so is there not a combination of activities by the husband?
I think there certainly can be interpreted as being a blend. But like I said, my client just doesn't have control. You look at these other cases where, like the Rezac case and the Stanislav case, we're dealing with very small entities. In fact, I think it was in this Show Group case, which is a recent case from this court. The court was looking in that case at very small entity in LLC with a brother and his sisters. Here we don't have that. Here we've got a company worth, you know, arguably $15 million. My client on the board of directors has one of 12 votes. That's not control. He's not a majority shareholder. He does have a significant amount of shares. There's 86 shareholders, and one of those is an ESOP with a couple hundred employees. This isn't a recent, that this keeping retained earnings in the company isn't some recent development with the goal of that spouse is being locked out. Since 1971, the investment strategy, the corporate strategy of Stevens and Smith has been to use these funds to grow the company. And I put in my brief the analogy of the pecan tree, which again, for 20 years, from 1971 to 1991, there was 20 years there where this corporation went from worth nothing, a couple guys, a shovel and a truck, to being worth $300,000. But that 20 years was instrumental in getting from $300,000 to $5 million.
But the I'm not a CPA, but my understanding is you got to do something with retained earnings. And if you want to minimize your tax exposure, you got to do something that they'll believe in.
Fair enough. And for 46 years, the retained earnings have been used by this corporation
To do what?
To grow the company.
And create other vehicles, other entities.
This other entity group, any reason?
I misunderstand that. Are they freestanding? Was the source of the funds for these other entities, which would have otherwise been retained earnings of Stevens and Smith?
The retained earnings, there was not some plan to hide the retained earnings or to shift them into a different investment vehicle.
Have we set any standard that says it has to be intentional to avoid marital distribution? Have we ever said that?
There's no finding or holding that I know of that necessarily looks at intent. But I think, again, in this particular case, my client not having control to do that, and you ask about Rip Inc. Rip Inc. was, I believe, sole shareholder of Rip Inc., I believe, is Stevens and Smith, and it was created to hold the real estate. What real estate? Well, it took 20 years to get to the point from 1971 to 1991 where this corporation had the sophistication where they could work a memorial stadium, in particular work on apartment complexes, build them, and retain them and own them. So, again, I don't think we can discount the 20 years it took to get to that level of sophistication.
Counsel, the finding that I was looking for where the court says, assuming the court believed that the appreciation in the Stevens B. Smith stock was marital, a one-third interest would be approximately $1.55 million, and half of the appreciated value would be $2.35 million, and he sets forth in parentheses his calculation. He then goes on to award $1.1 million in the Grace Award. How do we separate that out? Your opponent argues, well, you didn't cross-appeal, but isn't that language pretty clear that he was using a Grace Award to come close to a third of what the marital value would be?
I think what he was doing with the Grace Award was just trying to be fair to the facts of this particular case. Because with all these cases, all these decisions seem to have one common thread, which is what we're doing in this particular case isn't creating some bright line, but what we're trying to do is to be fair and reasonable under the facts of this particular case. And I think in determining that the Stevens and Smith stock was non-marital and determining the Grace Award, I think he also took into account that there weren't funds that my client had control to unilaterally keep in this corporation, because it had always been done that way. But I think it was also recognizing not only his limited capacity being one of 12 votes on the board of directors, but I think Judge Ott was also recognizing that what did Ms. Stevens get from the marriage? She had $250,000 a year in income from her husband. She was part of the growth and creation of a marital estate of $1.5 million. So I think Judge Ott was recognizing that as well. This wasn't some intentional plan by Mr. Stevens to, again, short her somehow this process. And I just think if you look at these cases, and I get how the law is morphing a little bit, and it certainly is with these investment vehicle cases like Colville, I think this is a bit different where is it active because of Mr. Stevens? Certainly had to agree with the success of his company. I would absolutely agree with that. But if you look at Van Newkirk and the Prodigy from Van Newkirk, can see that it's crystal clear that unless she was somehow involved in this corporation, that somehow she cared for it, somehow she was instrumental in operating it or increasing the value, she doesn't mean an exception like that. She doesn't get the windfall of what happens in the growth from 1991 until now, and we just exclude the 20 years that it took for the corporation to get traction to get where it needed to go.
Thank you very much. Is there time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We'll go on to the